Hello there, Duke fans, and welcome to episode number 605 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. We are coming to you about a half hour after Duke goes to Raleigh and in a just sensational show in the second half, beats the NC State Wolfpack. The final score is 79-64. I am your host, Donald Wine. I'm going to be taking you through this episode. This episode is going to be a little different because we have Jason Evans. Obviously, he is joining us, but Jason can only be here for a couple of minutes. Before we bring in Jason, Scott Rich is thankful. We're thankful to have him back on the show last minute. There's some things going on, but we wanted to have Scott on. So, Scott, hello. How are you doing?
I'm ecstatic. You never thumb your nose at a win in Raleigh. I've learned that firsthand.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Jason, I know we only have you for a couple of minutes. If you want to share to the people what's going on, this is something that obviously came up pretty quickly.
Not to get into too much detail. One of my best friends in the world lost his son, 26-year-old kid who I've known since he was in a playgroup in preschool with my son. So it's just a really difficult time. I was able to watch the game, but I'm busy planning shivas and other stuff for one of my closest friends. And it's just not, I can't put the effort into giving folks what they really deserve from this podcast. So I'm just gonna be on here for a couple minutes. By the way, my friend, is a huge Duke fan, and he's gone with me to Duke Clemson games and such. He usually listens to the podcast. I know he won't listen to this episode, of course, but, he's an amazing guy, and this is just such a tough time. But I want it. Enough.
No,
Jason. Pants off of NC State. ACC road win by double digit points. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, but Jason, real quick, you know, all the best to your family, to his family. May their memory be a blessing. I know that's a difficult situation, and you're doing the right thing as a best friend. I know if something happened, I would be there too.
I'm a mess, dude.
I get it. I get it. So we're gonna at least take your mind off for a couple minutes by talking about the fun that happened just now in Raleigh. Again, 79-64, the final score. We got a buttload of headlines in very quick fashion. People must have thought we were going to record very quickly after this game, and we got some good ones. So I'm going to go through those very quickly. Eric Blumenfeld just wrote, "Devils take pack to boarding school," and he has board in all caps. We will talk about the rebounding quite a bit in this podcast. Ken Swanner said, "Stewart takes slingshot to battle Burns the Giant and carries Duke to victory." We will be talking about that matchup. That was a great one.
That's brilliant.
Kendall Bennett was one of the first ones to write in, and I thought had one of the best ones. "Blue Devils burn brighter than Burns." I just did that once. I will not say it again because I know I will butcher it the second time. Mark Esselstein. Mark Esselstein actually sent two headlines, but I think it feels better said as one. And that headline is, "In Stewart we trust. Burns carries a lot of weight, but can't carry the pack alone." So I thought that was good. And then finally, Chris Bynum, because this show is so fun and that game was so much fun. "Live from Raleigh, it's the Sean Stewart Road Show. Blue Devils get huge win over NC State." Gentlemen, we're going to just get quickly into the good. There's a lot that we could talk about. Jason, go ahead. I know where you want to start.
Let me start with Sean Stewart. So the reason I'm on this podcast is because I have done nothing for the past 2 or 3 weeks but say, Sean Stewart, this guy's coming on, Sean Stewart. It has been my mantra. And by the way, I'm ashamed, Donald, that you picked him as player of the week last week and I didn't. I can't believe that I let that happen.
The good thing is that he was picked. So that means he was having a good week.
Yes. I am here for the Sean Stewart show every damn second of it. You know, a couple times this season I've said, you know, Sean's having trouble getting minutes because Mark Mitchell's playing so well, Sean can't get time. Mark Mitchell didn't get to play this game because Sean Stewart was getting so many minutes. He was ridiculous. And by the way, if you look down the box score, Sean Stewart has a positive statistic, actually multiple positive statistics in every single category except for turnovers. That is amazing. Dude finished. I mean, like, look, the offensive rebounds, the block shots. Oh my God, the block shots. Oh my God. And just everything he did in this game. I've been, like I said, I've been here trying to get this for him for so long, and it was just a wonder to behold. Poor NC State, that they had to be here for the Sean Stewart coming out party. I feel sorry for the Wolfpack.
Sean Stewart with 26 minutes. In 26 minutes, 12 points, 5 for 7 from the floor, 2 for 3 from the line, 5 rebounds, 4 of them offensive, 2 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals, plus 20. And Jason, you mentioned that positive stat, 0 turnovers. That man was everywhere. That man did everything. Scott, tell me more about Sean Stewart.
I have to eat a little bit of crow, because just like Jason has been on here singing Sean Stewart's praises, the first couple times you guys had me on the podcast back in the fall, I was noticing he doesn't look ready. You know, he's not getting those minutes because he looks a little lost on defense. Man, have I been so happy to have a guy prove me wrong in such a short amount of time. This kid, the light switch has turned on in his head. I think, you know, I'm going to say something crazy. I don't think since Brian Zubek starting against Maryland in his senior year in 2010, have we seen a big man turn the light on, flip the switch so suddenly and have such an immediate impact the way Sean Stewart just did.
I'm glad you said big man, because I was going to say this is Grayson Allen-esque. Grayson Allen freshman year, where the dude didn't play. And then suddenly Duke had a game against Wake Forest and Grayson Allen was like the best player on the floor, and he became an impact player right away.
Before you continue, Scott, I do want to offer you some grace, because we've been talking on the show about how just even a couple of weeks ago, Jason, that the game had not yet quite slowed down all the way for him. And that the last thing that we needed for him to do, he showed those flashes. We just needed the whole game around him to slow down. It feels like it has stopped for him over the last week. Like, that is great. But also, lest we forget, ladies and gentlemen, Justin Robinson did his thing in 2020 where he flipped the biggest switch of all time.
Oh, man. So Donald with the win.
We're talking about Duke lore here, right? We're talking about some legends, like cult classics, if we call them in the movies. Well, for Duke basketball, those type of guys where, again, a week ago, NC State is not planning for Sean Stewart. Now the entire ACC is planning for Sean Stewart.
So the thing that Sean did that I think impressed me most is he was so calm and collected around the basket. He did not throw up those, oh my God, I have the ball, chuck it up at the rim shots that he's been doing throughout the year and that's been the thing that's holding him back. That's been the thing that's been causing Duke fans to go, oh, he's so close. Every time he got the ball around the basket, it felt like it was going in. His little floater that he made off of, by the way, a great pass from TJ Power, a guy who we should not forget to mention the positive minutes that he put in, fellow freshman. Mm-hmm. That was a sophomore level shot. That was a shot I was expecting Sean Stewart to make as a sophomore, and he made it. Not only at the end of his freshman year, but in Raleigh, North Carolina, of all places, a place where Duke goes to die. They did not do that today.
Hey, we talked about the revenge tour that we've kind of had over the last couple of weeks, some places that we've gone on the road to that we never play well at, and we ended up getting the win. We talked about the Saturday-Monday doubles and a couple of those ending on the road at places that we don't like to win, and we come away with the win. 6-0 in the Saturday-Monday doubles this year. Two of those occurring with the back end being on the road. Jason, talk to me I know you got to go in a minute, but talk to me about the fact that this is a huge road win for the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah. So look, beating any ACC team on the road is a big deal. NC State is a fairly decent ACC team. I mean, again, they're not top of the league, and they're probably not going to make the NCAA tournament. But this is an ACC team that's, you know, right around the middle of the pack. And these are the kind of games that teams lose on the road all the time. I'm going to tell you why I'm so excited about this game. So since the Carolina loss, Duke has now won, 8 out of 9 games. Mm-hmm. And it'd be real easy to go, wow, this team peaking, they're great. And I've been the one saying that as well. But I always, in the back of my mind, had one little caveat, which is when you look at who Duke beat in this 8 out of 9 stretch and where those games were played, you were like, you know, Notre Dame, BC at home, Wake Forest at home is good, but it was a really close game. Florida State and Miami on the road. Yes, road wins, but Florida State's way down this year. Miami, frankly, had half their team injured. Like, then we lose at Wake. Then we beat Louisville and Virginia. Virginia's in a complete free fall. But, like, if you look at that stretch of games, you don't go, well, there's an impressive win. Like, frankly, none of those wins are super impressive. Make no mistake, Duke's playing great basketball. I'll take the wins over losses, no question about it. Several of those games on the road, but, like, none of them were games where you went, man, this is a team, this is the kind of win that a Final Four team gets. And I want to be clear, NC State is not a great opponent. They're decent. They're good. But they're probably the best team that we've beaten on the road this season, either them or Pittsburgh. And for Duke to do this by 15 points in a game where NC State comes just blaring out of the gates, you know, gets off to a lead, and Duke could have wilted right there. It was looking like last year's game in Raleigh. For a game where there's a ton of emotional baggage for NC State, where they are, you know, trying to salvage a season, last major game they have, senior night for NC State. For Duke to beat them by 15 points in a game like this, where Kyle Filipowski picks up fouls, where Caleb Foster cannot play. I mean, like, you couldn't, where Duke, frankly, couldn't shoot very well from the perimeter. If you're writing a script for Duke to lose, where Duke's looking ahead to North Carolina, you're writing a script for Duke to lose, and they won by 15 on the road. That is what a Final Four kind of team does. And I'm just unbelievably impressed with what they did. Guys, I got to run, but it was fun being
all
with
the
you
best,
all for
sir.
5 minutes.
Hey, that's how you make an exit with that kind of statement. And as Jason, as we say goodbye to you, I do want to say Kevin Keats has been with the NC State Wolfpack since the start of the 2017-2018 season. Other than the 2021 game where there was the players, there was nobody in the stands for that game, they have won against Duke at home every single time until tonight.
And not only have they won against Duke, they've won by double digits against us in every one of those games. This is not a place that Duke wins. We haven't won in Raleigh with fans in the stands since 2016. We've only done it twice since 2011.
Wow.
I was at that game in 2011, covering it for the Chronicle, running for my life as the fans poured over the stands in my own court storming, life flashing before my eyes experience. We don't win in Raleigh. I don't care if we win this game by 2 points or 17 points or 15 points, excuse me. A win in Raleigh is a really darn good sign for a Duke basketball team. And Jason, I'm with you. This might be my favorite win of the year so far.
I love it. Bye, guys. Y'all have fun.
Jason, thanks for being on. Sir. Thanks for jumping on. So, Scott, again, I think the one thing that kind of makes me so happy about this win, we're going to talk about the second half in a minute. I want to talk about the first half. The first half was led by what, and a lot of people kind of signal to this, it was led by the offensive rebounds. We had 14 of them in the first half. We had more offensive rebounds than we had defensive rebounds. And it led to up to 20. We had 23 second chance points on the evening. But in a first half where we did not shoot well at all, we shot 33% from the floor in the first half. We shot 25% from the line in the first half. We were getting a bunch of our offensive rebounds. And because of that, we took, I think, 13 more shots than NC State did. And that's why we kind of held a slim lead at the half. That's why we were always in it and always had a chance, because no matter what was going on or what was going wrong for us, we were killing them with those offensive rebounds and the putbacks.
If Sean Stewart hadn't exploded the way he did in the second half, we might be talking about this as another Ryan Young game because of what he did in the first half. The second half was Sean Stewart's show. The first half was a Ryan Young show. And the Ryan Young show is not as flashy as the Sean Stewart show. It doesn't get the ratings that it does. But Ryan Young kept us in that game in the first half when Kyle got fouls. He got offensive rebounds. Like, he was, you know, the driving force of that, many of those offensive rebounds. He wasn't just getting them, he was keeping balls active. He did his best against DJ Burns, which that's the only thing you can do, is do your best against that guy. And the way he hustles is so infectious to this team. I know I'm gonna foreshadow my pick for play of the game now, because it's a little bit abnormal, But my play of the game was Ryan Young almost getting the steal, busting his butt down the floor,
yep,
and causing the jump ball in the backcourt, which turned into a turnover because NC State only had 8 seconds on the shot clock to bring it back up. A 6'10 guy of Ryan Young's size does not run for that ball. That is not something normal. And I really, really hope Duke fans appreciate the level of effort and engagement that that young man has in his limited role on a team that many of us thought, you know, he would never make an impact on. The fact that he's doing that and he's having that impact on this team is something that I really, really hope he gets his flowers for. Because again, I don't think Duke is up three. It's not crazy to say this, but Duke is not up three at half without the way Ryan Young played in that first 20 minutes.
Oh, I agree. I remember I wrote this down. There was a lineup at one point where it was Proctor, Roach, TJ Power, Sean Stewart, and Ryan Young. And that was the all energy group. And it was led by Ryan Young at the time. You mentioned his limited minutes. He had 12 minutes, and it wasn't because he was doing poorly. It was because of how well Sean Stewart broke out in the second half. But he had in 12 minutes, he had 5 rebounds, 4 of them offensive, and most of them came in the first half, if not all of them. And he had 2 points on that Ryan Young cookout, you know, chocolate milkshake, dream shake that he had to kind of fool the guy into going one way and going up twice before laying it in. So
are we trying to come up with something that's not YMCA game anymore? We're trying to upsell the Ryan Young.
Well, no, it wasn't a dad move. It was a Hakeem Olajuwon dream shake move, but that's taken and probably trademarked at this point. So I was trying to go the cookout route. And plus, I'm hungry. I just want some cookout. That's all I was thinking about. But Ryan Young brings that out
of me. Cookout, sir. That's not fair.
Yeah. We have one like is 40 miles away, but I digress. I think when it comes to Ryan Young, I think the energy is that's the one constant for him. When he's not doing well, he's still fighting and playing with energy. Last year, when we had those games where we went to Miami and got blown out, when we went to NC State, got blown out, one constant was Ryan Young was bringing the energy, at least trying to at that point. He was infectious, and that created a lot of things. Look, even TJ Power had energy. He had a rebound. He had an assist. He had a block. He hit a three. He didn't play as many minutes. I think he played 10 minutes or what was that? But like TJ Power was even involved in just being a part of that energy lineup that I mentioned that kind of kept us in the game, despite the fact that we weren't making shots in the first half. And it gave us the opportunity to have the second half that we did, right? The guys that were out, Flip didn't have any points. McCain only had 2 at the half. Roach, I think, had 8 at the half. And then in the second half, all those guys come back. The energy unit's still there. They're still fresh. And everyone starts hitting stuff finally. And that's where it clicked. And the confidence that everybody on this team has in one another is infectious. And at this point, what they have is, just like Jason said, it's budding towards a team that looks like it is ready to say, hey, when the chips are settled, we want to be one of the Final Four, and we're going to play like that team, a team that is not going to do everything perfect, but they're going to get the job done. And slowly but surely, they were able to pull away until that final 7 minutes of the game where it was almost as fun as the whole Virginia game was.
Interesting note here. We're talking a lot about the way Duke used its bench, the way Duke used Ryan Young, Sean Stewart, and TJ Power. Tons of subs in and out in the first half, lots of that due to foul trouble. The second half, there were 4 substitutions that Duke made. Mark Mitchell came out for Sean Stewart with about 16 minutes to go. Mark didn't come back in the game. Kyle and Ryan swapped in and out once. Sean Stewart went out of the game with 43 seconds to go. That was it. John found his lineup, stuck with it in the second half. He had the confidence to say, Mark, you're off. You took a little bit of an ill-advised 3 here. Sean's hot. I'm not just going to sub him in, but I'm going to ride him for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That takes some guts. That takes some guts from a second-year coach in a hostile environment. And again, I don't think any of us would have expected that after watching the first half where we made good use of an 8-man rotation. The fact that we found something that worked and stuck with it through that second half, I think shows that John is becoming more and more flexible. John is adapting to the game in his substitution patterns, in his game planning, better and better each day. We talk about how young our team is. Our head coach is also really young too. Our head coach is still only in his second year, right? That adjustment, not only to adjust to Kyle's foul trouble in the first half, but to adjust to Sean's ascendance in the second half and say, you're not coming out of the game, you're playing the game of your life. That's easier said than done. And again, that doesn't Sean doesn't have that game if John doesn't have that confidence in him, not only throughout the year, instilling that in practice, but sticking with him in that second half. Lest that go unsaid. This was a growth game for the entire team and the staff, I think, as well.
Yeah, I do want to point out the fact that you mentioned the coaching staff and John Shire in particular. John Shire is, as we know, one of the most competitive, fiery dudes out there, right? He may not be demonstrative with his fire on the sidelines when it comes to like talking to the refs or things like that, but that man is as competitive as it comes. The thing that he's had to learn in his 2 years is that he can't play when he has that competitive fire. He can't check himself into the game as much as he would probably want to. And he has to, he has understood that he has to pass that competitiveness to his team because he cannot be the most competitive person on the floor because, as I mentioned, he can't play. That has started to shift. He started to do more X's and O's now. He started to see, you started to see some adjustments. You've seen the coaching staff coaching up. I love the fact this is a segue or I guess a sidebar. I love the fact that Duke Blue Planet has been doing those like clips
Yes.
where they show particular plays during the game that may be like they're not even the best plays of the game, but they're plays where you can hear the coaching staff talk about in the flow of the game. Hey, you know, he's going to make this. TJ Power, I got belief in him. TJ Power hits a three, and they're talking to each other like, "See, I told you he's got that work. He's been working on it. I knew that was going to fall." And then
What a
you see.
recruiting tool those videos
Yeah,
are.
and then you see another coach turn around and go, "What about Flip's pass? Flip's a great passer. If we can get that Flip to pass, we're going to be fine all game." Those are little things that you see improvement on, and that is passing down to the rest of the team. And I will say the competitive drive, this is my transition, it goes to the guards, right? Because in the second half, I thought the guards were incredible. I thought they were the ones that really carried the bulk of the load throughout the second half. McCain, 14 points in the second half, 16 overall. He hit th all three of his threes in the second half, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal. Jeremy Roach, 21 points, 13 of them in the second half, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal. Tyrese Proctor, 11 points, 3 three-pointers, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1 steal. And again, we were not shooting well in the first half. In the second half, we were lighting it up. But most of it, funny enough, was first of all, you had McCain and Tyrese Proctor hitting a couple threes, but then it was Jeremy Roach taking it to the rack when we were getting blocked every single time. It felt like down the floor in the first half, they got 0 blocks in the second half because and Jeremy Roach was just kind of taking it to the rack, and all of a sudden he realized I can do this as many times as I want. They cannot stop me, and they didn't. And I think that recognition to find those guys and also finding each other. You know, spoiler alert, one of my plays of the game, it was a lot of times we had some offensive rebounds. They came down in the hands of guards, and the guards would find other guards of the wing for shots. I think that was incredible because that's not something that we normally do. I get we're getting the offensive rebounds, but usually it's Flip or Mitchell or even Ryan Young or Sean Stewart getting it, passing it back out. We had guards in on the act in this point. And I think the guards, they had a slow first half. But when they poured it on, that's when NC State had no answer. That's when they had to kind of figure out we can't go to DJ Burns every possession anymore because the guards are going to run them dry. We had a lot of fast break points. I love this team. I love how this team responded to that adversity, how they, again, made those quick in-game adjustments. And because of that, we're talking about a win where it feels like it was fun the whole time, but we know it was a tough one.
Yeah, Jason alluded to this before he had to sign off, but this was not a fun first half.
No,
This
not at
was a
all.
game where I don't think I've seen a game from this Duke team this year where we missed more clean open threes from guys who are nailing them. You know, Jeremy Roach is shooting something like 45% from 3 for the year. He was, I think, you know, he shot 1 for 7 for the game, most of those in the first half. Right, this was a
And
game that
the three he hit was like with what, like 2 minutes left, where it was like, hey, ball game, good night, go home. Like,
The guards didn't play well in the first half. They didn't shoot well. They struggled. It was the offensive rebounding that kept us in the game. But I forget who it is on ESPN. It's just the lack of a conscience to keep shooting when you're struggling. This team has that. You know, Jared McCain was 0 for 6 for his first three, you know, with his first threes, poured it on in the second half. That's confidence you can't teach. Tyrese Proctor, you know, struggling with his shot all year, throws up some contested deep threes, keeping us in the game in that first half, nailing some more in the second half. Tyrese Proctor, by the way, didn't come out of the game. Tyrese Proctor played 40 minutes today amidst all those subs, amidst, you know, using the bench the way we did. Normally, this is a Jeremy Roach plays 38, 39 minutes. It wasn't Jeremy. It was Tyrese. Tyrese is back to end of last season Tyrese Proctor, which is the guy that we were expecting to see all year. And, you know, sort of like Sean Stewart, where, you know, we were expecting this guy to have this instant impact, and it's come delayed. It's coming in March. Tyrese is playing now like we expected him to coming into the year. And yeah, you know, it might have sucked a little bit that we had to wait this long, but if this is the Tyrese Proctor that we get for the month of March, this means very, very good things for this Duke basketball team.
One of my favorite plays of the game, but not my play of the game. It just missed because something else happened later on in the game. There was a point where we had a long rebound, and it came to Tyrese Proctor off of an NC State miss. He immediately did that handoff to Roach, and Roach turned what was an innocuous long rebound into a fast break opportunity. He just gunned it. But also on the other side, McCain gunned it. McCain basically got into his position. Roach did the cross court pass in transition. McCain hits the three, and he comes back down, and they zoom in on his face as he's guarding the guy bringing the ball up, and he just has a smile on his face as to say, "Y'all done messed up. Y'all done got me a look that I made. It's over with." Because the next play, or it was like 2 plays later, he had the transition three where he just dribbled down and just took the three himself, and then he had the three and the foul, which was in my mind the backbreaker for NC State. So it's funny where you see it all kind of pop, and they just kind of go, "Oh, you get now you're in trouble. You just let me did that. Now you're in trouble, and I'm gonna tell you about it." I loved the play from the guards in the second half. I loved the play from the inside guys in the first half. All that adds to my final one. When you kind of look at all these different stats that we really haven't got to, the balance of this team is what I think is the best emergence over the last few weeks. Is that, again, and McCain said it after the game, in the press, and not the press conference, but the post game interview. He said, "Look, the fact is, you know, Flip didn't have 10 points today, and that's fine because last game it was Jeremy and I didn't have 10 points. We have hitters in every part of our team, and it doesn't matter who's eating, everybody's eating when you got a couple guys that are on." The fact that they're able to sometimes defer to one another, but also gas each other up, right? Like, nobody expected 12 points to come from Sean Stewart tonight, but we got it. And that is the confidence that this team has in each other, and that's the confidence that this team has in just making things happen when things may not be feeling like they're going to happen.
I do have to say, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the defensive end of the ball. As excited as we were about the offensive fireworks, especially in the second half, we have to talk about that. And we got to talk about DJ Burns, who is a heck of a basketball player. It was a calculated move by this coaching staff and this team to say, and Jay Billis, you know, talked about this a lot on the broadcast. We decided that we were going to let DJ Burns take tough twos and not give up open threes. That worked. If DJ Burns has to score 30 points, that means that Duke's in a good shape, right? Especially when once we have that 6-8 point lead, DJ Burns is going to score. That's going to take 20, 25 seconds off the shot clock, right? What would we rather have when we're up 8? Would we rather have a 25-second 2-point possession or a 10, 15-second 3-point possession? That is the game planning. That's the guts to stick with the plan. Because again, it's so easy when Burns was as hot as he was in that first half to go into the half and say, okay, we've got to come up with this double team. We've got to swarm him, do whatever. And not only did Shire stick with his lineup, or stick with the strategy. He put Sean Stewart on DJ Burns. Kyle Filipowski was not guarding Burns for most of that second half. It was Sean Stewart. He said, okay, the size isn't working. Let's give him the athleticism. And Stewart held his own. That is a defensive versatility that we haven't seen this year. That's what Sean Stewart brings to this team that we've missed since Derek Lively has gone and been kicking butt in the NBA with the Mavs. That is the curveball. That's the changeup that Sean Stewart brings that Duke now has that is going to make this team so hard to plan for and so hard to game plan for offensively and defensively. Because that, you know,
Well, you're talking about DJ Burns, and you mentioned DJ Burns. He had an incredible game, right? 27 points on 12 of 19 shooting. He was, again, we were resigned to kind of letting him get his points while trying to stop everybody else. I counted too. Let me tell you the list of people who at one point guarded DJ Burns, and this is how we did it. So this is the list of the guys that had guarded DJ Burns at one point during the game. Tyrese Proctor, Jeremy Roach, Jared McCain, Kyle Filipowski, Mark Mitchell, Sean Stewart, Ryan Young, and TJ Power. If you're counting at home, I counted everybody who played for Duke basketball tonight. Everybody at one point had switched on to him or whatever. But again, when we switched off, there was times where we were able to get a shot, a bad shot, and go the other way. Or in the case of Sean Stewart, just by having someone there with the feint of trying to, the feint of a double team, cause DJ Burns to lose the ball, and then we're going the other way. So again, for a guy who got 27 points, I thought we did a great job at neutralizing everything that he did well, right? He had to do some tough shots and he made them. That was the thing about DJ Burns. It's credit to him, not necessarily a credit to the defense, but also credit to the
It
defense
wasn't
for putting him
easy.
in those positions.
Nothing he made was easy. Very few, if any, of his shots were uncontested layups. They were shots that he had to go into his bag of tricks and use that body and put up those hook shots, which give the man credit. That's an insane skill. That's a guy who's he'll have a long career playing overseas, I one would think, with his skill set. But again, Shire stuck to his guns. The team stuck to his guns and said, we can win with him scoring 2 points every 25 seconds. We can't win if that leads to the defense getting scattered, them taking advantage of double teams. That is, again, this team is maturing. This team is adjusting. This team is buying into the game plan offensively, which we've talked a lot about, but also defensively. And that's how you get a 15-point win on the road in a place where Duke has not just lost, but lost by double digits every time in the last decade that there has been fans in the stand, or excuse me, last 8 years. Regardless, we don't win in Raleigh. And not only did we win in Raleigh, we did so convincingly with some adversity in the first half. Best win of the year.
We'll leave it there in the good, because I don't think you can get as good as that. That was a great ending to that. Let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll talk about the things that we need to improve. Again, not a perfect game. We'll talk about the things we need to improve. And there's a couple of plays for playing the game. Which one will make it in our eyes? Find out after this. All right, we are back and we got to discuss some of the things in this game. Again, a 79-64 win over NC State. As we've been talking about how fun the second half was, it wasn't all great. There were some things that we need to improve on this game, especially as we move into fully into March. We got one more regular season to go. What do we take from this game? I'm going to do host privileges real quick and start with this. I think for a game that we knew was circled on the calendar, for a game that we knew the other team was going to bring it, the fans were going to bring it, for all the history that we talked about before the break, we didn't look great at the start. We came out flat, 9-0 deficit. We missed a couple open shots. And I think in the first half, that was really our killer and why the game was so close. We were able to move the ball around, I thought, but we weren't getting a lot of open shots that were going down. And this is an interesting note. And I noted this when I was in the prelude eating dinner before the game. Normally, when you go on a road trip, you're flying to a place, or you're going all the way to the place, and you're doing a shoot around at the gym so you can get used to the rims. You do that usually a few hours before the game. Today, we did shoot around at Duke. We did it in Cameron before heading to PNC Arena. Instead of doing it at PNC Arena, it showed in the first 30 minutes of this game, or first 20 minutes of this game, because we could not hit an open shot to save our lives. It felt like it really, I mean, we had that 9-0 start. It took a while for us to stem the bleeding, but every single time we thought we had a good play, it resulted in an open shot. It would rim in it out or it clang. We had a couple of really bad misses. And so I'm curious as to we, of course, we're recording really quickly after this, so I don't know if that was brought up during the press conference, but I'm curious to note if that was the strategy behind that, to do it at Duke instead of doing it at PNC, where you get used to at least a little bit used to the rims before you go, because it took us a while to warm up.
I noticed that too. Duke mentioned that on social media. They put that out on Twitter or X that they did their shoot around at Duke. I noticed that as well. It's a little bit of an oddity. Can't complain too much with the
Right.
result, but I agree that the tendency for this team to get out to slow starts is something that is still frustrating, and you can justify it away on the road in that environment. Can't justify it away at home. That's not something that can happen Saturday in the biggest game of the year. On my end, there were only really two negatives in this game. One was, again, the Kyle Filipowski foul trouble. You have to know, if you're Kyle Filipowski, what the game plan is. The game plan is to get you that first foul. It was first thing Jay Billis said on the broadcast. That was that they're going to go to DJ Burns early to try to pick up that foul on Kyle. Happened 2 minutes in, picks up the second a few minutes later. Again, it's something that as the star center, you have to know, especially in the March. The other thing we have to mention is Sean Stewart's ascendance was coupled with Mark Mitchell having a not so good game. He did have really bright moments in that first half. His offensive rebounding in particular really contributed to, again, keeping us in that game, helping us get that ha first half lead when those shots weren't falling in the second half. But especially in those first few minutes of the second, or I mixed up my halves there. Shots weren't falling in the first half. But in the first few minutes of that second half, he sort of looked like bad Mark Mitchell. There was a little bit of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, coming out there. And I'm not worried about him. Mark Mitchell has shown that he has Coach Shire's trust, that he's earned the trust of Duke fans. But what a luxury it is that when one of our most important players has an off night, that Duke was able to shift gears, go to the bench. But that's something, again, that Duke's going to need good Mark Mitchell. I forget whether Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde. I've never, in all my literature, never actually read that one. I forget which one's the good guy. But we need good Mark Mitchell to make the run that we want to make the rest of this month. I'm not too worried. I think we'll get him, but it's of note in a game that we're all so euphoric about that this was not a great night for Mark, and it's something he's going to have to bounce back from to perform on Saturday.
I think part of it also lends me to another thing that I thought we didn't do well, especially in the first, it really wasn't the first half, was we kept going to the rack and going right into the defense and hoping that a foul would be called. And they weren't calling fouls. Roger Ayers was calling this game. So you knew the fouls weren't coming. And if they were, they were not coming for you. But the game plan was abandoned because we had a lot of guys who would just go in and just get their shot thrown. And we gave up five blocks, or we conceded five blocks in the first half, five for the game. So we obviously turned that around in the second half, but it felt like we were going right into the defense the wrong way. And I say that as I know I'm kind of being slightly hypocritical in this, because I've asked for them to go at the defenses in previous episodes, but you do it the right way. You go at it to try and get a foul. You try to go at to dunk somebody's hand off, something like that, to go hard. We were going at them, but we just weren't going with the kind of intensity that will require them to abandon their plan of blocking. And it felt like all the blocks that they had were very soft shots. And we had a lot of soft shots around the rim that fell short. And the ones that we were like, oh, we're going to go up and do this again, it would get blocked. And I think that was where we, again, credit to the coaching staff, to the players, we adjusted from there. But that's something that you need to recognize, hopefully, a little bit earlier, especially when you start a first half the way we did. If we're going to start with a couple of blocks and a couple of long threes that kind of barely hit iron or don't hit it at all, then you need to figure out, hey, this is not what we're doing here. Let's get into something where we know we can get some points and kind of get our confidence and get our legs under us in this game. It's even more important on the road. Thankfully, there are no more road games at this point. We have a home game left, and then they're all neutral sites from now on. But that's where you feel a crowd turn on you. And of course, for us in the ACC tournament, NCAA tournament, we know that almost everywhere we go, they're not going to be fully neutral sites. Everyone's going to be neutral in favor of the team that we're playing against. And you don't want momentum to gain because you keep getting your shots blocked. That's the thing that's been killing us all year. It's the one thing on offense that we're not good at is seeing, not seeing that number very high. But I don't have the answer for it other than go stronger to the basket, go right at them. Because if you go stronger to the basket, that block turns into a foul. One foul turns into two. A DJ Burns is sitting quicker. Casey Morsell is sitting quicker. And they another team is having to adjust to you rather than you have to adjust your shots to the people that are in the paint.
Last bit of a small negative, but it's something that we should identify so it hopefully doesn't become a storyline, which is timeout management. The fact that the team had to use the second timeout in the first half on the out of bounds play, if this was a closer game, that could come back to haunt us. Last week, when we lost to Wake, my dad texted me the next day and said, "Okay, coach, why didn't coach share your timeout on that last possession?" I had to text back and say, "We were out of
We didn't have
timeouts.
one.
We didn't have one, right?" And I saw that play and I thought, okay, this will be, but before you invited me onto the podcast last minute, I said, okay, mark that down. If this comes down to another late game, close game on the road, and we don't have that timeout, that could be crucial. Luckily, it didn't end up that way. That's something that we should keep an eye on moving forward is Duke managing the clock, managing the timeout situation as they should be? Are they going to have that timeout in their back pocket to set up the last play of the game if need be?
Yeah, I think I saw John Shire's face when they called the second timeout in the first half, and he was not happy. And it wasn't, again, you're taught to do that as a basketball player. If you're caught in a situation, you have a timeout, use it. But it's not, that doesn't mean it's a good use of that timeout. You want to save your timeouts for something crucial. And thankfully, we kind of pulled away to the point we didn't need to have those timeouts at hand. But as you mentioned, in a very close game where it's a possession or two all the way down to the end, those timeouts become crucial and necessary.
It's like using a timeout for a delay a game on an inconsequential first quarter possession when you might need that, going down in the last 2 minutes. Something that drives me crazy every time that happens in the football game. A timeout is more valuable than 5 yards in that situation. In this type of a game, a timeout might be more valuable than a first half possession. Again, that's something that I'm sure Coach Shire has drilled into these guys, what his philosophy is and what he wants them to do. But that's something, those are the small little execution things. And we're really, picking nits here in a game that we were super happy about. But that's something that's a couple of games now in the last week, for last 2 weeks, where that's reared its head. And that's something that we should keep an eye on moving forward.
See, that's the type of play. If I'm holding the ball on the outside, I was taught to like count in my head to four. And once I start to say the word four, either call the timeout if we have plenty, or kind of like throw it off of the dude's like shin, because shin's not going anywhere without the leg. And if they move the leg, then it's going to go basically into arms of someone else on your team. So you kind of throw it off their shin, and worst case, you throw it off shin, it bounces out of bounds, and you get another. Get another crack at it. You get another 5 seconds to kind of think about how to get people open. So yeah, definitely something to keep in mind. Let's move to the play of the game. And I want to start because I have two plays. One is my play of the game and one is my almost play of the game. Here's my almost play. There was a point in the second half where Flip catches the ball on the wing and he kind of spun around like he wanted to hand it off or pass, but he kind of did a full pirouette 360. and ends up shooting the three, knocks it down. You're like, holy crap, where'd that come from? Okay, cool. We come back down the floor. Stewart is on DJ Burns on defense. He causes DJ Burns to slip and lose the ball. McCain picks it up, drives the length of the floor for the fast break layup, and NC State is forced to call a timeout at that point. That was when we were kind of getting on a run, and at that point I marked it down as like, play of the game, done. Until later on in that half, maybe 2 or 3 minutes later, fast break, we're on the break. Sean Stewart's there. He kind of lays it up off the glass. He misses. Roach grabs the rebound, and instead of going right back up with it, because there's an NC State guy there, and it's at this point, there's three Duke players in the paint. He turns around and finds McCain on the wing for the three-pointer, and McCain draws the foul, makes the free throw. It's a four-point play that was on top of a couple of other plays from before. That was the backbreaker. I think that was the play of the game. It absolutely ended any doubt in my mind that NC State, you know, or that Duke could pull this off. NC State at that point, they looked like they're like, if we could call 8 timeouts, it wouldn't be enough to kind of stem whatever momentum just generated from this play. So that was my play of the game.
So I foreshadowed this earlier. You know, my under the radar play of the game was Ryan Young's hustle. Ryan Young basically single-handedly forcing that shot clock violation in the first half. But if I have to go with a more traditional play of the game, Sean's and one in the second half where he went to the hoop. You know, I believe it was a lob, took the contact, finished it, didn't dunk it. You know, he has a habit of trying to go for the highlight reel dunk every time he gets there. Cause you know, if you could jump the way he can, you know, I would do that too, but he didn't. He played smart. He took the layup. He drew the contact. He got the foul. That was a sophomore level play. That was this Sean Stewart as a freshman, almost through his freshman year, making the type of plays we were hoping to see from him next year, you know, a few months early. And gosh darn, if that doesn't portend well for Duke down the line, where Duke's got a deep, deep bench and they've got a Swiss Army knife named Sean Stewart who can do those type of things, who can actually score a little bit, make the buckets that he needs to around the hoop. That's a different player. That's a different weapon that Duke now has in its arsenal going forward.
And I love the fact, as I mentioned at the top, I love the fact that every team that faces us from now on has to add that to their scouting report. Sean Stewart is in their scouting report now because of how he's played the last couple of weeks. And again, you talked about Brian Zubik. I talked about Justin Robinson, where again, those were guys who emerged seemingly out of nowhere very, very, very quickly. And their meteoric rise to being an integral part of the team is the reason why other teams were like, "What? I don't know what you want us to do about this. Like, Justin Robinson is going for 25 points. What can I do about this? Yeah, I already got to deal with the other guys." That's what this team is hopefully thinking about is, hey, now we have a sixth, seventh guy, and pray to the Lords that we can get Caleb Foster back healthy very, very soon. It doesn't seem like it's going to be this week, but if we can get him back by the NCAA tournament, I'm telling you, this team is poised to do some things.
Unnecessary aside, but I have to say it. Justin Robinson is still the biggest what if in Duke basketball history.
Oh my goodness.
What happens if there's the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament with that team led by Trey Jones with Justin Robinson? You know, COVID took a lot of things from us, so many of them infinitely more impossible than basketball. It also took Justin Robinson's ascendancy away from us. And God, does that suck.
Well, he gets to pass that on. And luckily, he's the director of player personnel, where I think that's his title on the Duke staff. So, hey, this little meteoric rise for Sean Stewart correlation, you be the judge. I know where it's coming from. at least the fact that he's there in practice all day and being able to talk to him and kind of use his story to help any of these guys, because his story can resonate with anybody. That you want that on your team. That's one of those early season pickups that we had on this team that has really probably done wonders. Hey, we're going to end it here on episode number 605 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. This was a fun one. Scott, I know we talked literally like half an hour before we jumped on here about you being on the show because of Jason and what he has to deal with right now. But so, Scott, thank you so much for once again pinch hitting in the clutch here and delivering once again, delivering a home run.
I'll have to say, if we're going to talk about Duke winning in Raleigh, I will come day or night, rain or shine. That is something that I will talk about at any point. That is something that Duke fans should be celebrating for at least for a week. Something more important is coming on Saturday. But feel this one, enjoy this one, Duke fans, because like I said, it doesn't happen all that often in recent history. This is a big, big win for this team.
I'm going to be the coach of this podcast. I'm going to say, yeah, you celebrate tonight. Tomorrow, it all turns towards Saturday night. Carolina's coming to town. We know how big that is. We will be back later this week to preview that big game. Of course, there's been a lot that has happened since the last time these two teams took the floor. We'll talk about all that on the next episode. But for now, he is Scott. For Jason, I am Donald Wine. This has been episode number 605. And now it is time for the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.